Greetings and welcome back to another and ongoing series of Shir Daf Yom. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and we are now going to have the 14th and final podcast of the fourth chapter of Masechet Gittin, by far the longest chapter in the Masechet. And it continues with the theme of Tikkun HaOlam, and it continues also with the theme of commerce with non-Jews. Amochertzadeh, this is the end of Mishnah Tet, which is found on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. Amochertzadeh Oloved Kochavim. If somebody sells his field to a non-Jew, Lokeachom Evim Menu Bikurim, he has to go back and purchase the first fruits from that field and bring them as Bikurim Mnei Tikkun HaOlam. And we will see what the mechanics are of that Tikkun HaOlam. The Gemara immediately introduces us to a concept which is central to the issue of mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz, land-based mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael. Amarabba, afapisha ein kinyan lo'ved kochavim Eretz Yisrael, afkia midei ma'aser. Rabba is of the opinion that if a non-Jew buys land in Eretz Yisrael, it is still obligated in ma'aser, and his kinyan does not uproot that obligation. Shinamar, kili ha'aretz. God says, the land is mine. Li kedushat ha'aretz. Aval yesh kinyan lo'ved kochavim Eretz Yisrael, lachpor ba'barot shichinu me'arot. But he does have if he does own land, he's allowed to dig holes and pits and trenches and caves, etc. in the land. Shinamar, ha'shamayim shamayim la'adonai, ratzon tam levnei adam. Land belongs to man. So in other words, how does Rambah resolve the contradiction between these two verses? He says, vis-a-vis kedushat ha'aretz, that stands. But vis-a-vis our ability to use the land as we wish, and therefore if he has gotten the land, he may do that, which by the way, will make some of the land unarable, and therefore unusable for Trumot and Masrot. That he's allowed to do. That's Rabba. Rabba Lazar Omer, Afapisha, Ein Kinyan L'Rikocha Meretz Yisrael, Afkimi De Maser. He says that, Shiesh Kinyan, sorry, that if a non-Jew buys land, it does obviate the obligation of Trumot and Masrot, land owned by a non-Jew is not obligated. Shinemar diganecha, you are supposed to bring diganecha, your corn, your grain. V'lo dagan oved kochavim, that's the maser. Aval enkian oved kochav meretz yisrael achpor ba'beor shichinu ma'arot. But he does not have the right to dig up the land. Shinemar la'adonai ha'aretzum lo'ah, the land belongs to God. So he resolves it in sort of the opposite direction. But now, b'maykim mipalgi, what's really the heart of their disagreement? Mar savar daganecha v'lo dagan oved kochavim. Rabba holds that the pasuk is masar degancha, a tithe of your corn and not the corn of the Oved Kochavim. Umar savar diguncha velo digun Oved Kochavim. It's more on the verb, meaning that which you have piled and not that which he has piled. But if he owns land and you buy the fruit, then you do need to separate Trumot and Masrot. Now, Amar Rabba. How do I know that ein kinyan legoy lafkia dinan halakar vashikcha v'peah? There's a mission at the end of the fourth chapter of Masechet Peah, halakar vashikcha v'peah shel oved kochavim shechayvin b'maaser elim ken hifkir. So the regular matnot aniyim from the field are obligated in maaser, meaning that a non-Jew designating something as payah, which he's allowed to do, does not remove the obligation of maaser, which it normally does, in the case of a Jew, unless hifkir. Now, hechidami, what's the case? Elam of Yisrael, if we think the land is owned by Yisrael, v'liktinu obed kochavim, and the non-Jew has collected this as like a shikro payah, so the elim kin hifkir, so how could you say that it is chayav masrot unless he's mafkir hamifkir v'kaimi? That's exactly what payah like it and shikha are. You are mafkir them. So you can't say unless he was mafkir. It must be alav, the Oved Kochavim must be owned by the non-Jew, but liktin Yisrael, it's the Jew who's collected it. Tama difkir, the only reason it's not obligated is if the non-Jew was mafkirit. Halo hifkir, but if he wasn't mafkirit, he just said you can come and collect your payah, whatever, then chayav. Which means that when they buy land, it's still, or they own land, it's still obligated to Trumot Masrot. Lo, Rabbi Lazar could answer, the Olam de Yisrael. Really, we're talking about a field of Yisrael. Liktinu Oved Kochavim, it's the non-Jew collected it. And then, you as a Jew, borrowed from him, you have to separate Trumot Masrot, even though he says, I collected it as payah from the Jew. And your claim, which is that there will be no reason in the Mishnah to say, if Hifkir, because they're already Hefker, and he the mifkri adatid Yisrael, yes, when the Jew is mafkirit to give it as payah, etc., he's mafkirit for Jews to collect. Adatid Oved Kochavim be mifkiri. He's not mafkirit legabe the goyim. So therefore, it's chayav unless he's mafkirit to everybody. Okay. Toshma. Let's see if we can see it. Now the proofs will really support Rabbi Lazar's position, which is that the goy's kinyan is not mafkia. Is mafkia. Toshma Yisrael shalakach sadem yavod kochavim ad shalo evi ashlish. If a Jew bought a field from a non-Jew before the fruit grew to a third of its growth, which means it's onata masrot, v'chazar macharalo meshevi ashlish, and after it grew that to that amount, you sold it back to him, chayevet b'maaser. Then it's chayev b'maaser. Why? Shekvar nitchayva, because when it passed the point of being chayev b'maaser, it was in your reshut. Nitchayva in, lo nitchayva lo. So it's only if it crossed the threshold of a third while the Jew owned it. So that means that if the non-Jew owned it, it is not obligated to maaser. So that seems to support Rabbi Lazar that the kinyan of a goy does uproot it from the obligation of tshuvot to maaserot. No, hachmas kinyan besuria. This takes us back to Daf Zion. This is referring to the areas in the north east of the Levant, in the area which is sort of the political area of Syria today. And this goes back to the issue we discussed in the first parak about David's conquest of Aram Tzova and Aram Naharaim, if that really made it Eretz Yisrael. So according to this opinion, it did not. And therefore, Midrabanan, we say there's Trumot to Masorot, but if a goy owns it, then not. Toshma Yisrael, Bobad Kocham Shalakhu Sadem Shutfut, if a Jew and a non-Jew bought a field together. Tevel v'chulin v'arvin zebazedin. What you have is chulin, the non-Jew stuff, and tevel, the Jews untie the stuff, mixed up together, Divrei Rabbi, which means you have to take Trumot Masorot from another area to cover them. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shalobit Kochavim Patur, Shal Yisrael Chayav. After they divided up, whatever is the non-Jews is Patur, whatever is the Jews is Chayav. So Ad Kadma Pli Gelder Marsava Yish Breira Marsava in Breira. The only dispute between them is the issue of Breira about retroactive designation about which belongs to the Jew and the non-Jew. But what's clear is that everybody here agrees that the stuff belonging to the non-Jew is not Chayav Masorot. So everybody agrees that the non-Jews' kinyan on the land does uproot its obligation of Trumot Masrot. So Hachanan Besuria, you could explain that that's also Besuria, because Sarah Kibush Yachid Lo Shmei Kibush. And again, to say that David's conquest of the land was not a full Kibush, and therefore Midrabanan, we obligate Trumot Masrot, but only on a Jew and a Jew's land. Avchia Baravin, Toshma, so he tries to bring another proof. Hamocher Sadeh Loved Kochavim, if you sold a field to a non-Jew, our Mishnah, you have to go back and buy Bikurim, ne Tikkun Ha'olam. But we said it's Tikkun Ha'olam, which means that essentially there is no Bikurim here. But ne Tikkun Ha'olam, we make you go back and buy it. By the way, why do we make you go back and buy it? We'll see. Ne Tikkun Ha'olam, in Midoraita Lo. So you see that their Kinyan really does uproot the obligation. Ravashi Shtei Takanot Habu. He says there is really a history here of two Takanot. Really, the land is obligated in Bikurim, like Rabbah says, and the Kinyan of the Goy doesn't do anything to it. Really, you had to go back and buy the fruit, Midoraita. So that what they saw was people were comfortably selling the land to non-Jews, because they said, look, it still remains its Kedusha, and I'm going to buy back the Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, I'm not doing anything wrong. The Sabbath Shatayu came and they held that it was really still as holy as before. Then they made a takana that you can't bring Bikurim from such land to make people realize that they were really doing a bad thing by selling it. If they saw that somebody wasn't able to withstand it, they needed to sell it. He would sell it, and then it would disappear. And they would say, oh, there's no more Bikurim here. This is gone. Forget it. It's lost land. Then they made the reverse takana that you have to bring the Bikurim. But really, the second Tikkun Ha'olam was restoring it to its Doraita law. Okay. Itmar, Hamocher Sadehu Liperot. Now, from here to the end of the parak, we're going to deal with a tangential issue, which is Kinyan Perot. When I sell the rights to collect fruit from my land, question is, does the buyer now have an ownership in the land or not? That's a famous Machlok of Yochan Rish Lakish. We dealt with it in the ninth parak of Ketubot. We'll deal with it again. Hamocher Sadehu Liperot. If I sell my field for harvesting, meaning I still own the title deed, and somebody else gets the rights to all the fruit. The buyer can bring that fruit and read the Mikra Bikurim. Now, parenthetic note here, but very critical for the rest of the piece. The Torah commands us to bring Bikurim of our first fruit to the Beit HaMikdash. In addition, the Torah obligates us to do a declaration, a reading, which involves Arami, Oved, Avi, etc. Not everyone can do the reading, because it has to be someone who could say, this is the fruit of my land. If you're not the owner of the land, for instance, a sharecropper or a shaliach, you can't do that reading. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, if you have bought the rights to harvest land, you can bring the perot, and you can also do the declaration, because it's your land. Rish Lakish says, you bring the fruit, you don't do the reading. Why? Because when you've bought a kinyan perot, when you have the kinyan perot, you own the title. It's your land. You could say the land that you gave me, God. Your rights to harvesting do not give you title deed to the land. Are not considered that way. Now, Eitav Rabbi Yochanan Shlokish, Rabbi Yochanan challenged Rish Lokish, because in the Torah's description of the rejoicing of Bikurim, it says, Ula Veitecha. You rejoice with your household. Malamein Shadam Evi Bikurei Shtova Korei. Proves you can bring Bikurim from your wife's field, which you have a kinyan perot on. Remember, it's Renichse Malog. You can bring Bikurim from there, and you can make the declaration. So you see that your kinyan perot on her land allows you to do the reading. It's kinyan aguf. So Amar Lei, Rosh Lakish answered back, Shani Hatam Detiv Leveitacha. Rosh Lakish says, that's different because the Torah went out of its way to say Leveitacha. Why would the Torah have to say Leveitacha? If not for the fact that normally kinyan perot is not kinyan aguf. Veikadami, some people had the inverted read on this. Eitav Erishim Ben Lakish Lerab Yochanan Uleveitacha Malameid Shadam Evibikurei Shtova Korei. So Rish Lakish says that's why the very fact that it said Ulevetecha proves that normally it's not the case. Now, Ve'ika Da'amri, there's another version of this that has the opposite. Eitav Rav Shimon Lakish Tobi Yochanan Ulevetecha Melamed Shadam Evibikurei Shtova Korei. He brought that same limud. Hatam Hudichtiv Ulevetecha. It's only because the Torah went out of its way to say Ulevetecha. Va'alma lo, normally a Kinyan Aperot is not a Kinyan Aguf. So Amar Lei, so Rabbi Yochanan answered back, Tana Didi Nami Mihacha Kamina. Indeed, that's where I get it from. How do I know that Kinyan Perot Kinyan Aguf? Because of what the Torah commands regarding Bikurei Ishto. It proves that your Kinyan HaPerot is Kinyan Aguf, and you could say, the land which you gave me, God. Eitave, so we have a challenge to this. Hayababa Derech Bikurei Ishto Biado. Let's say a guy was on his way to Yerushalayim, and he was carrying Bikurim from his wife's field. Shamash Meite Ishto, and on the way he heard that his wife died, which means he immediately inherits her. Meviva Korei, then he can come and do the reading. Meta in lo meta lo. It sounds like it's only if she died, which means that he then fully owns it. No, hu adin dafagav de lo meta, be true even if she didn't die. Umeta itzrichale. We needed to teach that lesson because hakadaita chamena ligzor mishum de Rabbi Yosef b'Chanina. We might make a gzera that in such a case you can't read because of the ruling of Rabbi Yosef b'Chanina. Tamar Rabbi b'Chanina batsran v'shigran biad shaliach. Let's say you harvested your grapes and you sent them with a shaliach. Umet shaliach baderach, and the shaliach died on the way. Mevive no korei. You go and pick up the fruit and you don't do the declaration. Why? Shemar v'lakachta and uvata or reveta. Meaning, it has to be one person doing the whole thing. So therefore, I might think that in that case, since you were bringing Bikurei Ishto, you shouldn't bring them all, Kamash Malan, that you do, but in any case, you would read. All right, V'azdul Tamayr, Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokish are consistent with their own reasoning. Ditmar, Hamocher Sadehu, Bizman Shal Yovel Noheg. If somebody sells his field during an era when we are practicing the Yovel, first Beit HaMikdash, very simple. That field is a field that's going to go back to the owners, which means right now all you have is a kinyan perot. Rabbi Yochanan says you read Mikra Bikurim. Rosh Lakish says you don't. Straight up, same thing. The question is, why do we need both machlokot? Utsricha. Why do we need them both? Di itmar behahi, if we only had that particular case, bahikam Rish Lakish, I would think that Rish Lakish says, in our case, you don't read, because you only have a kinyan perot, you never own this land at all, you never think you're going to build something on, you're going to live there, you just bought the season of harvest. Therefore, he'd say, that's not kinyan haguf, but in this case of Yovel, when for the next possibly 49 years you're going to live there, you're going to have children and maybe grandchildren there, therefore you really think of it as your land. Maybe he agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that it really is kikinyan aguf, and now flip it. If we only had the case of Yovel, Pakam Rabbi Yochanan, we'd think Rabbi Yochanan says it's like your land for there. I would think that he agrees with Rish Lakish in the case where it's only a seasonal purchase, that it's not kinyan aguf, therefore I need both. Toshma, kone ilan vikarkao. If you bought a tree and the land around it, meviva kore, you bring the vikarim and you do the reading. So hachamaskin is van chayna yovel noheg. That's talking about a case where there is no yovel, like today, or any time after the first Beit HaMikdash, and therefore that land is yours forever. It really is your land. Toshma, kone shne ilan opetoch sadeo shachaveo, meviva no kore. There's a sugyan v'batra on the fifth parak. If you bought two trees in a guy's field, then, not with the land, just the trees, Then you bring it, but you don't do the reading because you don't get land. Three, you do read. Hashloshami vivikore. It's also Mishnah Bikurim. Hashloshami vivikore. If you've had three, so vivikore. So you see that even though that land's eventually going to go back in the Yovel, you still read. Sachanam is manchene Yovel noeg. That can also be in a time when there is no Yovel being practiced. Vihashton Rav Chista. Rav Chista had a statement about Yovel. Machloket be Yovel sheni. The only machloket is the second Yovel in history and afterwards. Aval be Yovel rishon, but the very first Yovel that was practiced, divirakome vivikore. Everybody agrees that you bring it. Why? Nobody's used to this yet. In other words, in history, the first time they practiced Yovel, before that, for the 50 years before that, when they started counting, nobody was thinking, I'm going to lose this land. They didn't know what that was like. So when they bought the land, they really thought of it as theirs. Alright, so Lokash will be overreached on Habi Yovel Sheni. So then we can easily answer. We don't have to say it's in a time when Yovel isn't in practice. We can say it was during the first Yovel. So Lema Ketanoi, perhaps this entire discussion about Kinyan Peruk and Kinyan Aguf parallels this Machlo Ketanaim. Minayin Lokeach Sademi Aviv Iktisha V'Yacharkach Meit Aviv. You've got to listen carefully to the details. How do I know that if somebody buys a field from his father and is Maktish it, and then his father dies, which means then he would have inherited it, Minayin Shtei Lefanav K'Shtei Achuza, how do I know that it should still be considered Shtei Achuza, an inherited field, and therefore it doesn't go back in Yovel, or it would not go back into the pot, Tamid Lomar, and it's Shtei Miknato Asher Lomi Shtei Achuzato. What goes back in Yovel? Something that you bought, which is not your legacy. Sadeshe Naru Yaliot Steachuza, meaning not just a field that's not an inherited, a field that could not be classified as an inheritable thing. Yatztazushu Yaliot Steachuza, as opposed to this field that could have been Steachuza had you not bought it from your father. Divri Yudav Rebbe Shimon. That's their approach. Rameomer, the opposite. Minan Lokeach Sademi Aviv Umetaviv Acharka Chiktisha. How do I know that if you bought the field from your father, and then he died, and then you were makdish it. Minayin shtei lefanav k'shtei achuza. Talmud Lomar mitzvei migator shalom istei achuzato sadeh she'ina sadeh achuza. So it has to be a field which is not an inheritance. That's tazushi istei achuza, as opposed to this. V'ilu reyud Rabbi Shimon meit aviv acharkach hikdisha lo tzricha kra. They say if the father died and then you're makdish it, you don't need a pasuk for that. Why? Ma'alav v'hakim pagum. Rameir savar kim pero kikinyan aguf dami. Because Rameir says that the Kinyan Peirot that you have on this thing, which is eventually going to be taken from you, but will come back, is Kinyan Aguf. Uvahav mitat aviv hu lo yarit v'lo midi. When father dies, you're not inheriting anything because you already owned it. Hilkach meit aviv v'charkach hikdisha tzarech kra. Therefore, we need a pasuk for when father died and then you were makdish it. All right, there you need a pasuk to say that it stays in the family. Rav Shimon Sari, Kinyan Peiro, Lauki Kinyan Aguf Dami, and our lineup here would have Rav Shimon taking the position expressed by Rish Lakish. It's only when father died, now you're inheriting it. What you bought before wasn't an inheritance. That was Kinyan Peiro, because of Yovel. Therefore, if father died, then you're makdish, you don't need a pasuk, because it was never really yours. The only reason the pasuk is needed is for when you're makdish and then father died. Now, that's what we would think. Rav Shimon really accept Kinyan Peirot Kinyan Aguf, and so does Rav Meir, of course. Everybody agrees. Why do they disagree here about the order of where the pasuk is needed, whether the father died or your makdish at first? They found a pasuk and they darshened it. If his bought field, which is not his inheritance, my mistei achuzato. Why did the Torah add mistei achuzato? Sadeh shena ruuyah liot stei achuzah. It has to be a field that could never be a stei achuzah. Yatztazush ruuyah liot stei achuzah, as opposed to this field that could have been stei achuzah had you not bought it. All right, so that means that at this point, the position we're taking is that everybody agrees with Rabbi Yochanan, Kinyan Peruk, Kinyan Aguf Dami, and the machloket here is simply one of interpretation of the psukim. I'm Rav Yosef. If it weren't for the fact that Rabbi Yochanan said that, and he is the master, there would have been no way to support such a position. Why? When brothers divide up land, that's considered a purchase. Then when Yovel comes, they have to return the field back to them. We've seen this several times. And then they redivide. If you really think that Kinyan Peirot is nothing, then you would have a weird position where nobody could ever be Kareem because everybody's an heir except if you have a single person who is the son of a single person going all the way back to Yeshua. So there never was a Kenyan, there never was a redivide. In other words, if since Rabbi Yochanan says that Yerusha is a form of temporary ownership, and at Yovel it goes back, that means you could never, if you held Kenyan, temporary ownership is not Kenyan Aguf, that means you'd have to never bring, you could never do the Bikar Bikurim unless you were a single son, son of a single son, going all the way back to Yehoshua ben Nun with no multiple family members, where there was a redivide of Yerusha. Right? Amarava, Kram, Anita, Messiah, the Rosh Lakish. Said, in spite of the fact that Paschal and Rabbi Yochanan is clear from the Sugya, both Psukim and Breitot support Rosh Lakish. Kram, what's the Pasuk? When you buy land for, in, before Yovel, you buy based on the amount of years of harvest that are coming. Right? Which means that it's based on Kinyan Perot. Matnita de Tanya, we have a Breita that supports it. Bechor al Topi Shnayim b'Sdeh HaChuzer L'Aviv b'Yovel. A Bechor, remember the halacha, that a Bechor only gets double in Muchzak, in that which the father owns, not Ra'ui L'Pol Achar Moto. What happens if there's a field that father sold and is going to come back to father b'Yovel, but father died? The Bechor still gets Pishnayim, because the father is considered Muchzak in it, which means the Kinyan Perot that the other guy had is not Kinyan Aguf, it's still owned by the father. We have a ruling that if a man wants to negotiate about the status of his wife's property, he is to get a writ from her because she is indeed the owner. That's only if the other guy is not coming to discuss the perot. Since the husband can alone negotiate about the perot, because that's his, therefore he can also negotiate about the goof. But really, these are all rulings that seem to support Rish Lakish, that your ownership of the perot is not your ownership of the land. And therefore, for instance, a wife's property, the husband needs her express permission to negotiate about the status of that land because he is not considered the owner. Hadran Allah HaShalech, we have completed our study of the fourth parak, and we'll continue with the theme of Tikkun HaOlam in the next podcast, when Yirtzeh Hashem we pick up with our study of the fifth parak of Masechet Kittin, parak HaNizakin. In the meantime, everyone should have a wonderful day.